age. A king's duty is to protect his people. When faced with the choice of conversion or letting my people be destroyed, I think I would have to choose conversion.
You would be as spineless as the Jindouis, Serene said.
The Jindouis are a wise people, Serene, her father said, his voice growing firm. They did what they needed to survive.
But that would mean giving up.
It would mean doing what we have to do, her father said. I won't do anything yet. As long as there are two nations left, we have hope. However, if Aerilon falls, I will be forced to surrender. We cannot fight the entire world, Een. No more than one grain of sand can fight an entire ocean.
But... Serene's voice trailed off. She could see her father's predicament. Fighting Fjordan on the battlefield would be an exercise in complete futility. Convert or die. Both options were sickening. But conversion was obviously the more logical choice. However, a quiet voice inside her argued that it was worth dying, if death would prove that truth was more powerful than physical strength. She had to make sure her father was never given that choice. If she could stop Raethyn, then she might be able to stop Wyrn. For a time, at least. I'm definitely staying, father, she declared.
I know, Een. It will be dangerous.
I understand. However, if Aerilon does fall, then I would probably rather be dead than watch what happens in Teod.
Be careful, and keep an eye on that Yorn. Oh, by the way, if you find out why Wyrn is sinking Iodine ships, tell me.
What? Serene asked with shock.
You didn't know?
Know what? Serene demanded.
King Iodine has lost nearly his entire merchant fleet. The official reports claim that the sinkings are the work of pirates, some remnant of Drio Crushthroat's navy. However, my sources link the sinkings with Fjordan.
So that's what it was, Serene said.
What?
4 days ago, I was at a party, Serene explained. A servant delivered a message to the king, and whatever it was unsettled the king a great deal.
That would be about the right time frame, her father said. I found out 2 days ago myself.
Why would Wyrn sink innocent merchant vessels? Serene wondered. Unless... Eidos Domai! If the king loses his income, then he would be in danger of losing his throne.
Is all that nonsense about rank being tied to money true?
Insanely true, Serene said. Iodine takes away a family's title if they can't maintain their income. If he lost his own source of wealth, it would destroy the foundation of his rule. Raethyn could replace him with someone else, a man more willing to accept Shudareth, without even bothering to start a revolution.
It sounds feasible. Iodin asked for such a situation by concocting such a unstable basis for rule.
It's probably Tel Rai, Serene said. That's why he spent so much money on that ball. The Duke wants to show that he is financially sound. I would be very surprised if there wasn't a mountain of Fjordel gold behind his expenditures.
What are you going to do?
Stop him, Serene said. Even though it hurts. I really don't like Iodin, father.
Unfortunately, it looks like Raethyn has chosen our allies for us.
Serene nodded. He has placed me with Elantris and Iodin. Not a very enviable position.
We all do the best with what Domai has given us.
You sound like a priest.
I have found reason to become very religious lately."
Serene thought for a moment before replying, tapping her cheek as she considered his words. "A wise choice, Father. If Domai were ever going to help us, it would be now. The end of Teod means the end of Shu Korath."
"For a time, perhaps," her father said. "Truth can never be defeated, Serene, even if people do forget about it occasionally."
Serene was in bed, the lights down. Aishi hovered on the far side of the room. His light dimmed so much that he was barely an outline of Aeon Aishi against the wall. The conversation with her father had ended an hour ago, but its implications would likely plague her mind for months. She had never considered surrender an option, but now it looked almost inevitable. The prospect worried her. She knew that it was unlikely that Wyrn would let her father continue to rule, even if he did convert. She also knew that Evan Teo would willingly give his life if it would spare his people. She also thought about her own life and her mixed memories of Teod. The kingdom contained the things she loved most, her father, brother, and mother. The forests around the port city of Teowin, the capital, were another very fond memory. She remembered the way the snow settled on the landscape. One morning she had awoken to find everything outside coated in a beautiful film of ice. The trees had looked like jewels, sparkling in the winter daylight. Yet Teod also reminded her of pain and loneliness. It represented her exclusion from society and her humiliation before men. She had established early in life that she had a quick wit and an even quicker tongue. Both things had set her apart from the other women. Not that some of them weren't intelligent. They just had the wisdom to hide it until they were married. Not all men wanted a stupid wife, but there also weren't a lot of men who felt comfortable around a woman they assumed was their intellectual superior. By the time Serene had realized what she was doing to herself, she had found that the few men who might have accepted her were already married. Desperate, she had ferreted out the masculine opinion of her in court, and had been mortified to learn just how much they mocked her. After that, it had only grown worse, and she had only grown older. In a land where nearly every woman was at least engaged by the age of 18, she was an old maid by 25. A very tall, gangly, argumentative old maid. Her self-recrimination was interrupted by a noise. It didn't come from the hallway or window, however, but from inside her room. She sat up with a start, breath catching in her throat as she prepared to jump away. Only then did she realize it wasn't actually coming from her room, but from the wall beside her room. She frowned in confusion. There weren't any rooms on the other side. She was at the very edge of the palace. She had a window looking out over the city. The noise was not repeated, and determined to get some sleep despite her anxieties, Serene told herself it had simply been the building settling.
Chapter 18. Dilaf walked in the door, looking a bit distracted. Then he saw the Elantrian sitting in the chair in front of Raythan's desk. The shock nearly killed him. Raythan smiled, watching as Dilaf's breath audibly caught in his throat. His eyes grew wide as shields, and his face turned a shade not unlike the color of Raythan's armor.
"Ruggeth, yah!"
Dilaf yelped in surprise, the Fjordel curse rising quickly to his lips. Raythan raised his eyebrows at the expletive, not so much because it offended him, but because he was surprised that it should come so easily to Dilaf. The Artith had submerged himself in Fjordan's culture, deeply indeed. Say hello to Dairene, Artith, Raythan said, gesturing to the black and grey-faced Elantrian. And kindly refrain from using Lord Yarath's name as a curse. That is one Fjordel habit I would rather you hadn't assumed.
An Elantrian?
Yes, Raythan said. Very good, Artith. And no, you may not set fire to him. Raythan leaned back slightly in his seat, smiling as Dilaf glared at the Elantrian. Raythan had summoned Dilaf to the room, knowing full well the kind of reaction he would get, and he felt a little petty at the move. That, however, didn't stop him from enjoying the moment. Finally, Dilaf shot Raythan a hateful look, though he quickly masked it with one of barely controlled submissiveness.
What is he doing here, my Roden?
I thought it would be good to know the face of our enemy, Artith, Raythan said, rising and walking over to the frightened Elantrian. The two priests were, of course, conversing in Fjordel. There was confusion in the Elantrian's eyes, along with a feral sort of fear. Raythan squatted down beside the man, studying his demon. Are they all bald, Dilaf? He asked with interest.
Not at first, the Artith answered sullenly. They usually have a full head when the Karathi dogs prepare them for the city. Their skin is paler as well.
Raythan reached out, feeling the man's cheek. The skin was tough and leathery. The Elantrian watched him with frightened eyes. These black spots, these are what distinguish an Elantrian?
It is the first sign, my Roden, Dilaf said, subdued.
Either he was getting used to the Elantrian, or he had simply gotten over his initial burst of hatred, and had moved on to a more patient, smoldering form of disgust.
It usually happens overnight. When the accursed one wakes up, he or she will have dark blotches all over their body. The rest of their skin turns grayish-brown, like this one, over time.
Like the skin of an embalmed corpse, Raythan noted. He had visited the university in Svorden on occasion, and knew of the bodies they kept there for study.
Very similar, Dilaf agreed quietly. The skin isn't the only sign, my Roden. Their insides are rotten as well.
How can you tell?
Their hearts do not beat, Dilaf said, and their minds do not work. There are stories from the early days 10 years ago, before they were all locked away in that city. Within a few months, they turned comatose, barely able to move, except to bemoan their pain.
Pain?
The pain of their soul being burned by Lord Yadath's fire, Dilaf explained. It builds within them until it consumes their consciousness. It is their punishment.
Raythan nodded, turning away from the Elantrian.
You shouldn't have touched him, my Roden, Dilaf said.
I thought you said that Lord Yadath would protect his faithful, Raythan said. What need have I to fear?
You invited evil into the chapel, my Roden.
Raythan snorted. There is nothing sacred about this building, Dilaf, as you know. No holy ground can be dedicated in a country that hasn't allied itself with Shudarath.
Of course, Dilaf said.
His eyes were growing eager for some reason. The look in Dilaf's eyes made Raythan uncomfortable. Perhaps it would be best to minimize the time the Artith spent in the same room as the Elantrian.
I summoned you because I'm going to need you to make the preparations for the evening sermon, Raythan said. I can't do them myself. I want to spend a bit of time interrogating this Elantrian.
As you command, my Roden, Dilaf said, still eyeing the Elantrian.
You are dismissed, Artith, Raythan said firmly.
Dilaf growled quietly, then scuttled from the room, off to do Raythan's bidding. Raythan turned back to the Elantrian. The creature didn't seem mindless, as Dilaf had put it. The guard captain who'd brought the Elantrian had even mentioned the creature's name. That implied that it could speak.
"Can you understand me, Elantrian?" Raythan asked in Aeonic.
Dairin paused, then nodded his head.
"Interesting," Raythan said musingly.
"What do you want with me?"
the Elantrian asked.
"Just to ask you some questions," Raythan said, stepping back to his desk and sitting down.
He continued to study the creature with curiosity. Never in all of his varied travels had he seen a disease such as this.
"Do you have any food?" the Elantrian asked.
There was a slight edge of wildness to his eyes as he mentioned the word food.
"If you answer my questions, I promise to send you back to Elantris with a full basket of bread and cheese."
This got the creature's attention. He nodded vigorously.
"So hungry," Raythan thought with curiosity. "And what was it that Dilaf said? No heartbeat? Perhaps the disease does something to the metabolism. Makes the heart beat so quickly that it's hard to detect. Increases the appetite somehow. What were you before you were thrown into the city, Dairin?" Raythan asked.
"A peasant, my lord. I worked the fields of Aeor Plantation."
"And how long have you been an Elantrian?"
"I was thrown in during the fall," Dairin said. 7 months, 8... I lose track."
So Dilaf's other assertion, that Elantrians fell comatose within a few months, was incorrect. Raythan sat thoughtfully, trying to decide what kind of information this creature might have that could be of use to him.
"What is it like in Elantris?" Raythan asked.
"It's terrible, my lord," Dairin said, looking down. "There's the gangs. If you go the wrong place, they'll chase you or hurt you. No one tells the newcomers about things, so if you aren't careful, you'll walk into the market. That's not good. And there's a new gang now, so say a few of the Elantrians I know on the streets. A fourth gang, more powerful than the others."
Gangs. That implied a basic level of society, at least. Raythan frowned to himself. If the gangs were as harsh as Dairin implied, then perhaps he could use them as an example of Sfracus for his followers. However, speaking with the complacent Dairin, Raythan was beginning to think that perhaps he should continue making his condemnations from a distance. If any percentage of the Elantrians were as harmless as this man, then the people of Kaye would probably be disappointed in the Elantrians as demons. As the interrogation proceeded, Raythan realized that Dairin didn't know much more that was of use. The Elantrian couldn't explain what the Sheod was like. It had happened to him while he was sleeping. He claimed that he was dead, whatever that meant, and that his wounds no longer healed. He even showed Raythan a cut in his skin. The wound wasn't bleeding, however, so Raythan just suspected that the pieces of skin hadn't sealed properly as they healed. Dairin knew nothing of the Elantrian magic. He claimed that he'd seen others doing magical drawings in the air, but Dairin himself didn't know how to do likewise. He did know that he was hungry, very hungry. He reiterated this idea several times, as well as mentioning twice more that he was frightened of the gangs. Satisfied that he knew what he'd wanted to find out, that Elantris was a brutal place, but disappointingly human in its methods of brutality, Raythan sent for the guard captain who had brought Dairin. The captain of the Elantris City Guard entered obsequiously. He wore thick gloves, and he prodded the Elantrian out of its chair with a long stick. The captain eagerly accepted a bag of coins from Raythan, then nodded as Raythan made him promise to purchase Dairene a basket of food. As the captain forced his prisoner out of the room, Dilaf appeared at Raythan's door. The Artith watched his prey leave with a look of disappointment.
"Everything ready?" Raythan asked.
"Yes, my Rodan," Dilaf said. "People are already beginning to arrive for the services."
"Good," Raythan said, leaning back in his chair, lacing his fingers thoughtfully.
"Does something concern you, my Rodan?"
Raythan shook his head.
"I was just planning for the evening's speech. I believe it is time for us to move on to the next step in our plans."
"The next step, my Rodan?"
Raythan nodded.
"I think we have successfully established our stance against Elantris. The masses are always quick to find devils around them, as long as you give them proper motivation."
"Yes, my Rodan."
"Do not forget, Artith," Raythan said, "that there is a point to our hatred."
"It unifies our followers. It gives them a common enemy."
"Correct," Raythan said, resting his arms on his desk. "There is another purpose, however, one just as important. Now that we have given the people someone to hate, we need to create an association between Elantris and our rivals."
"Shu-Korath," Dilaf said with a sinister smile.
"Again correct. The Karathi priests are the ones who prepare new Elantrians. They are the motivation behind the mercy this country shows its fallen gods. If we imply that Karathi tolerance makes its priests sympathizers, the people's loathing of Elantris will shift to Shu-Korath instead. Their priests will be faced with two options. Either they accept our incrimination, or they side with us against Elantris. If they choose the former, then the people will turn against them. If they choose the latter, then it puts them under our theological control. After that, a few simple embarrassments will make them appear impotent and irrelevant."
"It is perfect," Dilaf said. "But will it happen quickly enough? There is so little time."
Raythan started, looking over at the still smiling Artith. How had the man known about his deadline? He couldn't. He must be guessing.
"It will work," Raythan said. "With their monarchy unstable and their religion wavering, the people will look for a new source of leadership. Shu-Dareth will be like a rock amidst shifting sands."
"A fine analogy, my Rodan."
Raythan could never tell if Dilaf mocked him with such statements or not.
"I have a task for you, Artith. I want you to make the connection in your sermon tonight. Turn the people against Shu-Korath."
"Will my Rodan not do it himself?"
"I will speak second, and my speech will offer logic. You, however, are more passionate, and their disgust for Shu-Korath must first come from their hearts."
Dilaf nodded, bowing his head to show that he acceded to the command. Raythan waved his hand, indicating the conversation was over, and the Artith backed away, closing the door behind him. Dilaf spoke with characteristic zeal. He stood outside the chapel, on a podium Raythan had commissioned once the crowds became too large to fit in the building. The warm spring nights were conducive to such meetings, and the half-light of sunset, combined with torches, gave the proper mixture of visibility and shadow. The people watched Dilaf with rapture, even though most of what he said was repetitious. Raythan spent hours preparing his sermons, careful to combine both duplication for reinforcement and originality to provide excitement. Dilaf, just spoke. It didn't matter if he spouted the same denunciations of Elantris and the same redundant praises to Yadath's empire. The people listened anyway. After a week of hearing the Artith speak, Raythan had learned to ignore his own envy, to an extent at least. He replaced it with pride. As he listened, Raythan congratulated himself on the Artith's effectiveness. Dilaf did as Raythan had ordered, beginning with his normal ravings about Elantris, then moving boldly into a full accusation of Shu-Korath. The crowd moved with him, allowing their emotions to be redirected. It was as Raythan had planned. There was no reason for him to be jealous of Dilaf. The man's rage was like a river Raythan himself had diverted toward the crowd. Dilaf might have the raw talent, but Raythan was the master behind it. He told himself that, right up to the moment Dilaf surprised him. The sermon progressed well, Dilaf's fury investing the crowd with a loathing of everything Karathi. But then the tide shifted, as Dilaf turned his attention back to Elantris. Raythan thought nothing of it at first. Dilaf had an incorrigible tendency to wander during his sermons.
"And now behold," Dilaf suddenly commanded. "Behold the Sfrakis. Look into his eyes, and find form for your hate. Feed the outrage of Yadath that burns within you all."
Raythan felt himself grow cold. Dilaf gestured to the side of the stage, where a pair of torches suddenly burst into flame. Dairene the Elantrian stood tied to a post, his head bowed. There were cuts on his face that had not been there before.
"Behold the enemy," Dilaf screamed. "Look, see, he does not bleed. No blood runs through his veins, and no heart beats in his chest. Did not the philosopher Gronkest say that you can judge the equality of all men by the common unity of blood? But what of one who has no blood? What shall we call him?"
"Demon!"
a member of the crowd yelled.
"Devil!"
"Sfrakis!" Dilaf screamed.
The crowd raged, each member yelling his own accusations at the wretched target. The Elantrian himself screamed with wild, feral passion. Something had changed within this man. When Raythan had spoken with him, the Elantrian's answers had been unenthusiastic, but lucid. Now there was nothing of sanity in his eyes, only pain. The sound of the creature's voice reached Raythan even over the congregation's fury.
"Destroy me,"
the Elantrian pled.
"End the pain. Destroy me."
The voice shocked Raythan out of his stupor. He realized one thing immediately, that Dilaf couldn't be allowed to murder this Elantrian in public. Visions of Dilaf's crowd becoming a mob flashed through Raythan's mind, of them burning the Elantrian in a fit of collective passion. It would destroy everything. Iodine would never suffer something as violent as a public execution. Even if the victim was an Elantrian, it smelled too much of chaos a decade old. Chaos that had overthrown a government. Raythan stood at the side of the podium dais, amid a group of priests. There was a pressing crowd bunched up against the front of the dais, and Dilaf stood in front of the podium itself, hands outstretched as he spoke.
"They must be destroyed," Dilaf screamed. "All of them! Cleansed by holy fire!"
Raythan leaped up onto the dais.
"And so they shall be," he yelled, cutting the Artith off.
Dilaf paused only briefly. He turned to the side, nodding toward a lesser priest holding a lit torch. Dilaf probably assumed that there was nothing Raythan could do to stop the execution, at least nothing he could do that wouldn't undermine his own credibility with the crowd.
"Not this time, Artith," Raythan thought. "I won't let you do whatever you wish."
He couldn't contradict Dilaf, not without making it seem like there was a division in the Dorethi ranks. He could, however, twist what Dilaf had said. That particular vocal feat was one of Raythan's specialties.
"But what good would that do?" Raythan yelled, struggling to speak over the screaming crowd.
They were surging forward in anticipation of the execution, calling out curses at the Elantrian. Raythan gritted his teeth, pushing past Dilaf and grabbing the torch from the passing priest's hand. Raythan heard Dilaf hissing in annoyance, but he ignored the Artith. If he didn't gain control of the crowd, they would simply push forward and attack the Elantrian on their own. Raythan held aloft the torch, thrusting it upward repeatedly, causing the crowd to yell with pleasure, building a kind of chanting rhythm. And in between pulses of rhythm, there was silence.
"I ask you again, people," Raythan bellowed as the crowd fell silent, preparing for another yell.
They paused.
"What good would killing this creature do?" Raythan asked.
"It's a demon,"
one of the men in the crowd yelled.
"Yes," Raythan said, "but it is already tormented. Yadith himself gave this demon its curse. Listen to it, pleading for death. Is that what we want to do? Give the creature what it wants?"
Raythan waited tensely, while some of the crowd's members screamed, "Yes!" out of habit. Others paused. Confusion showed, and a bit of the tension deflated.
"The Sfrakis are our enemies," Raythan said,
speaking with more control now, his voice firm rather than passionate. His words calmed the people further.
"However, they are not ours to punish. That is Yadith's pleasure. We have another task. This creature, this demon, this is the thing that the Karathi priests would have you pity. You wonder why Aerilon is poor compared to the nations of the East? It is because you suffer the Karathi foolishness. That is why you lack the riches and blessings found in nations like Jindo and Svordan. The Karathi are too lenient. It may not be our task to destroy these creatures, but neither is it our task to care for them. We certainly shouldn't pity them or suffer them to live in such a grand, rich city as Elantris."
Raythan extinguished the torch, then waved for a priest to go and do the same for the lights illuminating the poor Elantrian. As those torches winked out, the Elantrian disappeared from view, and the crowd began to settle down.
"Remember," Raythan said, "the Karathi are the ones who care for the Elantrians. Even now, they still hedge when asked if the Elantrians are demons. The Karathi are afraid that the city will return to its glory, but we know better. We know that Yadith has pronounced his curse. There is no mercy for the damned. Shu-Korath is the cause of your pains. It is the thing that supports and protects Elantris. You will never be rid of the Elantrian curse as long as the Karathi priests hold sway in Aerilon. So I say to you, go! Tell your friends what you have learned, and urge them to shun Karathi heresies."
There was silence. Then people began to call out in agreement, their dissatisfaction successfully transferred. Raythan watched them carefully as they yelled approval, then finally began to disperse. Their vengeful hatred had mostly dissipated. Raythan sighed with relief. There would be no midnight attacks on Karathi priests or temples. Dilaf's speech had been too fleeting, too quick, to have done lasting damage. The disaster had been averted. Raythan turned, eyeing Dilaf. The Artith had left the stage after Raythan had seized control, and now he stood watching his crowd disappear with petulant anger. He would turn them all into zealous replicas of himself, Raythan thought, except their passion would burn out quickly once the moment passed. They needed more. They needed knowledge, not just hysteria.
Artith, Raythan said sternly, catching Dilaf's attention. We need to speak.
The Artith contained a glare, then nodded. The Elantrian was still screaming for death. Raythan turned to another pair of Artiths, waving toward the Elantrian.
Collect the creature and meet me in the gardens.
Raythan turned to Dilaf, nodding curtly toward the gate at the back of the Dorethi Chapel. Dilaf did as ordered, moving toward the gardens. Raythan followed him, on the way passing the confused Elantra city guard captain.
My lord, the man asked, the young priest caught me before I got back to the city. He said you wanted the creature back. Did I do wrong?
You are fine, Raythan said curtly. Go back to your post. We'll deal with the Elantrian.
The Elantrian seemed to welcome the flames, despite the terrible pain they must have caused. Dilaf huddled to the side, watching eagerly. Though it had been Raythan's hand, not Dilaf's, that had dropped the torch onto the oil-soaked Elantrian. Raythan watched the poor creature as it burned, its cries of pain finally silenced by the roaring fire. The creature's body seemed to burn easily, too easily, within the licking flames. Raythan felt a stab of guilt for betraying Dairene, though that emotion was foolish. The Elantrian might not have been a true devil, but he was certainly a creature that Yadith had cursed. Raythan owed the Elantrian nothing. Still, he regretted having to burn the creature. Unfortunately, Dilaf's cuts had obviously maddened the Elantrian, and there was no sending him back to the city in his current state. The flames had been the only option. Raythan watched the pitiful man's eyes until the flames consumed him completely.
And the burning fire of Yadith's displeasure shall cleanse them, Dilaf whispered, quoting the Dodareth.
Judgment belongs to Yadith alone, and it is executed by his only servant Wyrn, Raythan quoted, using a different passage from the same book. You should not have forced me to kill this creature.
It was inevitable, Dilaf said. Eventually, all things must bow before Yadith's will. And it is his will that all of Elantris burn. I was simply following fate.
You nearly lost control of that crowd with your ravings, Artith, Raythan snapped. A riot must be carefully planned and executed. Otherwise, it will just as likely turn against its creators as their enemies.
I got carried away, Dilaf said. But killing one Elantrian would not have made them riot.
You don't know that. Besides, what of Iodine?
How could he object? Dilaf said. It is his own order that escaping Elantrians can be burned. He would never take a stand in favor of Elantris.
But he could take a stand against us, Raythan said. You were wrong to bring this creature to the meeting.
The people deserve to see what they are to hate.
The people are not ready for that yet,
Raythan said harshly.
We want to keep their hatred formless. If they start to tear up the city, Iodine will put an end to our preaching.
Delaf's eyes narrowed. You sound as if you were trying to avoid the inevitable, my Rodan. You fostered this hatred. Are you unwilling to accept responsibility for the deaths it will cause? Hate and loathing cannot remain formless for long. They will find an outlet.
But that outlet will come when I decide it, Raythan said coldly. I am aware of my responsibility, Artith, though I question your understanding of it. You just told me that killing this Elantrian was fated by Yadith, that you were simply following Yadith's fate by forcing my hand. Which is it to be? Would the deaths I cause in riot be my doing, or simply the will of God? How can you be an innocent servant, while I must accept full accountability for this city's people?
Delaf exhaled sharply. He knew, however, when he had been defeated. He bowed curtly, then turned and entered the chapel.
Raythan watched the Artith go, fuming quietly. Delaf's action this night had been foolish and impulsive. Was he trying to undermine Raythan's authority? Or was he simply acting on his zealous passions? If it was the second, the near riot was Raythan's own fault. He had, after all, been so proud of himself for using Delaf as an effective tool. Raythan shook his head, releasing a tense breath. He had defeated Delaf this evening, but the tension was growing between them. They couldn't afford to get into visible arguments. Rumors of dissension in the Dorethi ranks would erode their credibility.
I will have to do something about the Artith, Raythan decided with resignation.
Delaf was becoming too much of a liability. His decision made, Raythan turned to leave. As he did, however, his eyes fell again on the Elantrian's charred remains, and he shuddered despite himself. The man's willful acceptance of immolation brought memories to Raythan's mind, memories he had long tried to banish. Images of pain, of sacrifice, and of death. Memories of Dachor. He turned his back on the charred bones, walking toward the chapel. He still had one other task to complete this evening. The Sione floated free from its box, responding to Raythan's command. Mentally, Raythan chided himself. This was the second time in 1 week he had used the creature. Reliance on the Sione was something to be avoided. However, Raythan could think of no other way to accomplish his goal. Delaf was right. Time was very scarce. 14 days had already passed since his arrival in Aerilon, and he had spent a week traveling before that. Only 70 days remained of his original allotment, and despite the size of the night's congregation, Raythan had converted only a tiny fraction of Aerilon. Only one fact gave him hope. Aerilon's nobility was concentrated in Kaye. To be away from Iodine's court was political suicide. The king granted and took away titles willfully, and a high profile was necessary to assure a firm place in the aristocracy. Wyrn didn't care if Raythan converted the masses or not. As long as the nobility bowed, the country was considered Dorethi. So, Raythan had a chance, but he still had much work to do. An important piece of it lay in the man Raythan was about to call. His contact was not a Yorn, which made Raythan's use of the Sione a little unorthodox.
However, Wyrn had never directly commanded him not to call other people with his Sion. So Raythan was able to rationalize the use. The Sion responded promptly, and soon Fortin's large-eared, mouse-like face appeared in its light.
"Who is it?"
he asked, in the harsh Fjordale dialect spoken in the country of Rovell.
"It is I, Fortin."
"My lord Raythan?"
Fortin asked with surprise.
"My lord, it has been a long time."
"I know, Fortin. I trust you are well."
The man laughed happily, though the laugh quickly turned into a wheeze. Fortin had a chronic cough, a condition caused, Raythan was certain, by the various substances the man was fond of smoking.
"Of course, my lord,"
Fortin said through his coughing.
"When am I not well?"
Fortin was a man utterly contented with his life, a condition that was also caused by the various substances he was fond of smoking.
"What can I do for you?"
"I have need of one of your elixirs, Fortin," Raythan said.
"Of course, of course. What must it do?"
Raythan smiled. Fortin was an unparalleled genius, which was why Raythan suffered his eccentricities. The man not only kept a Sion, but was a devout follower of the Mysteries, a degenerate form of the Jeskar religion, common in rural areas. Though Rovell was officially a Dorethi nation, most of it was a primitive, sparsely populated countryside, which was difficult to supervise. Many of the peasants attended their Dorethi services with devotion, then took part in their midnight mystery ceremonies with equal devotion. Fortin himself was considered something of a mystic in his town, though he always put on a show of Dorethi orthodoxy when he spoke with Raythan. Raythan explained what he wanted, and Fortin repeated it back. Though Fortin was often drugged, he was very accomplished at the mixing of potions, poisons, and elixirs. Raythan had met no man in Sikla who could match Fortin's skill. One of the eccentric man's concoctions had restored Raythan to health after he had been poisoned by a political enemy. The slow-acting substance was said to have no antidote.
"This will be no problem, my lord,"
Fortin promised Raythan in his thick dialect. Even after years of dealing with the Rovan, Raythan had trouble understanding them. He was certain that most of them didn't even know there was a pure, correct form of their language back in Fjordan.
"Good," Raythan said.
"Yes, all I'll need to do is combine two formulas I already have," Fortin said. "How much do you want?"
"At least two doses. I will pay you the standard price."
"My true payment is the knowledge I have served Lord Yadith," the man said piously.
Raythan resisted the urge to laugh. He knew how much of a hold the Mysteries had on Rovell's people. It was a distasteful form of worship, a syncretic combination of a dozen different faiths, with some aberrations, such as ritual sacrifice and fertility rites, added in to make it more alluring. Rovell, however, was a task for another day. The people did what Wyrn commanded, and they were too politically insignificant to cause Fjordan distress. Of course, their souls were in serious danger. Yadith was not known for his leniency toward the ignorant.
"Another day," Raythan told himself, "another day."
"When will my lord be needing this potion?" the man asked.
"That is the thing, Fortin. I need it immediately."
"Where are you?"
"In Aerilon," Raythan said.
"Ah, good," Fortin said. "My lord has finally decided to convert those heathens."
"Yes," Raythan said with a slight smile. "We Dorethi have been patient with the Aerilines long enough."
"Well, your lordship couldn't have picked a place farther away," Fortin said. "Even if I finish the potion tonight and send it in the morning, It will take at least 2 weeks to arrive.
Wraithen chafed at the delay, but there was no other option.
Then do so, Fortin. I will compensate you for working on such short notice.
A true follower of Yadith will do anything to bring about his empire, my lord.
Well, at least he knows his Dorethi doctrine, Wraithen thought with a mental shrug.
Is there anything else, my lord?
Fortin asked, coughing slightly.
No. Get to work, and send the potions as quickly as possible.
Yes, my lord. I'll get started immediately. Feel free to pray to me any time you need to.
Wraithen frowned. He had forgotten about that little inaccuracy. Perhaps Fortin's mastery of Dorethi doctrine wasn't all that sound after all. Fortin didn't know Wraithen had a Sion. He simply assumed that a Yorn could pray to Yadith, and that God would direct his words through the Sions. As if Lord Yadith were a member of the post.
Good night, Fortin, Wraithen said, keeping the displeasure from his voice. Fortin was a drug addict, a heretic, and a hypocrite. But he was still an invaluable resource.
Wraithen had long ago decided that if Yadith would suffer his Yorns to communicate using Sions, then he would certainly let Wraithen use men such as Fortin. After all, Yadith had created all men, even the heretics. Chapter 19. The city of Elantris glowed brilliantly. The very stones shone, as if each one held a fire within. The shattered domes had been restored, their smooth, egg-like surfaces blossoming across the landscape. Thin spires stabbed the air like streaks of light. The wall was no longer a barrier, for its gates were left permanently open. It existed not to protect, but for cohesion. The wall was part of the city somehow, an essential element of the whole, without which Elantris would not be complete. And amid the beauty and the glory were the Elantrians. Their bodies seemed to shine with the same inner light as the city, their skin a luminous pale silver. Not metallic, just pure. Their hair was white, but not the worn-out dull gray or yellow of the aged. It was the blazing white of steel heated to an extreme temperature, a color free of impurities, a powerful, focused white. Their bearings were equally striking. The Elantrians moved through their city with an air of complete control. The men were handsome and tall, even the short ones. And the women were undeniably beautiful, even the homely ones. They were unhurried. They strolled rather than walked, and they were quick to greet those they met. There was a power in them, however. It radiated from their eyes and underlay their motions. It was easy to understand why these beings were worshipped as gods. Equally unmistakable were the Aeons. The ancient glyphs covered the city. They were etched into walls, painted on doors, and written on signs. Most of them were inert, simple markings rather than runes with an arcane purpose. Others, however, obviously held energy. Throughout the city stood large metal plates carved with Aeon Taya, and occasionally an Elantrian would approach and place his or her hand in the center of the character. The Elantrian's body would flash, and then disappear in a circular burst of light. His body instantly transported to another section of the city. Amid the glory was a small family of Kei townspeople. Their clothing was rich and fine, their words were educated, but their skin did not glow. There were other regular people in the city, not as many as the Elantrians, but a fair number nonetheless. This comforted the boy, giving him a familiar reference. The father carried his son tightly, looking around with distrust. Not everyone adored the Elantrians. Some were suspicious. The boy's mother gripped her husband's arm with tense fingers. She had never been inside Elantris, though she had lived in Kaei for over a decade. Unlike the boy's father, she was more nervous than distrustful. She was worried about her son's wound, anxious as any mother whose child was near death. Suddenly the boy felt the pain in his leg. It was blinding and intense, stemming from the festering wound and shattered bone in his thigh. He had fallen from someplace high, and his leg had snapped so soundly the shattered bone had torn through the skin to jut into the air. His father had hired the best surgeons and doctors, but they had been unable to stop the infection. The bone had been set as well as possible, considering it had fractured in at least a dozen places. Even without the infection, the boy would walk with a limp the rest of his days. With the infection, amputation seemed the only recourse. Secretly, the doctors feared it was too late for even that solution. The wound had occurred high on the leg, and the infection had probably spread to the torso. The father had demanded the truth. He knew his son was dying. And so he had come to Elantris, despite his lifelong distrust of its gods. They took the boy to a domed building. He nearly forgot his pain as the door opened on its own, sliding inward without a sound. His father stopped abruptly before the door, as if reconsidering his actions. But his mother tugged insistently on the man's arm. His father nodded, bowing his head and entering the building. Light shone from glowing aeons on the walls. A woman approached, her white hair long and full, her silvery face smiling encouragingly. She ignored his father's distrust, her eyes sympathetic as she took the boy from hesitant arms. She laid him carefully on a soft mat, then brought her hand into the air above him, her long, thin index finger pointing at nothing. The Elantrian moved her hand slowly, and the air began to glow. A trail of light followed her finger. It was like a rupture in the air, a line that radiated with deep intensity. It was as if a river of light were trying to force its way through the small crack. The boy could feel the power. He could sense it raging to be free, but only this little was allowed to escape. Even that little was so bright that he could barely see for the light. The woman traced carefully, completing Aeon Ayin. But it wasn't just Aeon Ayin. It was more complex. The core was the familiar Aeon of healing, but there were dozens of lines and curves at the sides. The boy's brow wrinkled. He had been taught the Aeons by his tutors, and it seemed odd that the woman should change this one so drastically. The beautiful Elantrian made one final mark at the side of her complex construction, and the Aeon began to glow even more intensely. The boy felt a burning in his leg, then a burning up through his torso. He began to yell, but the light suddenly vanished. The boy opened his eyes with surprise. The afterimage of Aeon Ayin still burned into his vision. He blinked, looking down. The wound was gone. Not even a scar remained. But he could still feel the pain. It burned him, cut him, caused his soul to tremble. It should have been gone, but it was not. "Rest now, little one," the Elantrian said in a warm voice, pushing him back. His mother was weeping with joy, and even his father looked satisfied. The boy wanted to yell at them, to scream that something was wrong. His leg hadn't been healed. The pain still remained.
No! Something is wrong.